So this is from the movie The Shack. I don't know if y'all have seen The Shack yet. It's a great movie, or read the book. It's a good book too. But the reason I picked it is because it's the name of the song is Keep Your Eyes on Me. So I have a slightly different interpretation of the song, just to let you know that sometimes happens, right? To me, this is about focusing attention on awareness, right? Keep your eyes on me, even though that's not exactly what the song is about. That's how it sings to me. So here we go. Tim McGraw, Faith Hill, Keep Your Eyes on Me, from the motion picture, The Shack.
Ain't it just like a tear to go and blur out everything? Ain't it just like glass to fall and break so easily? Ain't it just like love to leave a mark on the skin and underneath? Yeah, when the pain goes and shadows everything.
Keep your eyes on me. Keep your eyes on me. When it hurts too much to see, keep your eyes on me.
Ain't it the sinner gets all the grace sometimes? Ain't it the saint who picks up the pieces left behind? Yeah, and it's human to hurt the one you hurt the one you love the most, and you can't find the sun.
Keep your eyes on me when you're lost in the dark. Keep your eyes on me when the light in your heart is too burned out to see. Keep your eyes on me.
Swear you're all alone sometimes.
Keep your eyes on me.
And you can't find your way home sometimes.
Keep your eyes.
Song, huh? So we're here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we are on page 77. We're in the section called self-inquiry. And of course, we just finished a self-inquiry retreat at the Awakening Together Retreat House in La Vida. And at least for me, it was a wonderful, wonderful retreat experience. We spent quite a bit of time in the early morning in meditation. And then we spent the majority of the rest of the time in group contemplation regarding quotes from Ramana Maharshi based on self-inquiry. And what happened during this group contemplation is that, at least I think, our understanding of self-inquiry really deepened. So that when we left the week, we had a better understanding of what self-inquiry is and a much greater understanding of how to practice it. And hopefully, everyone has a much stronger desire to practice it more regularly. So the self-inquiry retreat is one that I'll be offering semi-regularly. Like I think I have it on the schedule twice this year. And right now, I imagine that, you know, I'll continue to offer it like it will be a regular retreat until it's not anymore. So if you weren't able to come to this first self-inquiry retreat, there will be others. Just keep watching the schedule. And then we also have the natural meditation retreat coming up this month. And again, it's another retreat that will be a regular retreat. Very, very similar type of retreat, except it's based on Nisargadatta Maharaj's teaching of watching the I Am presence. Ultimately, we know both Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj were teaching the same thing. They just had different ways of teaching it. And, you know, different ways are great because, you know, different people hear it when it's expressed in different ways, right? So next month's retreat will be the natural meditation retreat based on Nisargadatta Maharaj's teaching. So I'm really looking forward to that. After having a whole week of self-inquiry with Ramana Maharshi, I'm looking forward to a week of focusing on the I Am presence with Nisargadatta. So today, we're starting a little over half on the page, and there's a question, which, you know, you guys are used to, but the answer is the whole rest of the chapter. So what I don't know until I start reading is whether I'm going to sit here and read the whole answer and then come back and look at it in pieces, or whether I'm going to stop in pieces. I won't know that until I start doing it. But if I just keep reading and reading and reading, it's because the rest of the chapter is the answer to this question, which is approximately 2 pages of text. So we'll see what happens. But here's the question. Not having realized the truth that the self alone exists, should I not adopt bhakti and yoga magras as being more suitable for purposes of practice than inquiry? Bhakti, of course, is devotion. And yoga magras, or however you say it, I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but I'm not sure what that is. So let's look in the... It just says yogic paths. So it's not very specific. I guess it would be kind of, following the different yogic paths. Things that are a little more traditional, I think, in Hinduism than self-inquiry, right? So not having realized the truth that the self alone exists, should I not adopt devotion and the yogic paths as being more suitable for purposes of practice than self-inquiry? Is not the realization of one's absolute being, that is the Brahmayana, something quite unattainable to a layman like me? So basically what this questioner is saying is, isn't it downright impossible for me to become enlightened? And shouldn't I just stick to some more, suitable spiritual paths that will keep me in the path of devotion, keep me in touch with God as an other? Wouldn't that just be better for me? You know, because what you're asking us to do is something that's really unattainable. So let me look up this term Brahmayana. I think I probably know what it is, but let's go ahead and just be extra sure. I didn't know what it was. It's realization of one's absolute being. So self-realization is what we would call it. So being that is self-realization is something quite unattainable to a layman, is what he is saying. So Ramana Maharshi says, self-realization is not a knowledge to be acquired, so that acquiring it, one may obtain happiness. It is one's ignorant outlook that one should give up. So I guess I'm going to pause right there. Because really, there's an idea that this man has stated, which I know many of us also believe, which really is the ignorant outlook. The idea that self-realization is unattainable to me, right? And what Ramana Maharshi is saying, it's that idea right there you have to let go of. In fact, if we pay close attention to the teachings of both Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj, as well as I'm sure many, many others, one of the things they say that is absolutely necessary is the faith or the trust in the guru's teachings, right? The faith or the trust in the guru's teachings, what is the guru telling you? That you can be self-realized in this lifetime, right? Isn't that what they're saying? They're not saying you have a slim chance, but you might as well try, which I think is what we hear, right? They're saying you can be self-realized in this lifetime. There's just, you know, there's no reason why you can't be. Of course, there's an if in that statement. And the if is if we are want it wholeheartedly and therefore are willing to fully devote ourselves to it, right? That's really the if in the statement. But they're saying, they're always saying it's absolutely possible. It's up to us. So if we have these ideas like this man does, that self-realization, listen to his exact language, is something quite unattainable. Quite unattainable. To a layman like me. You hear how that has no possibility in it of self-realization. So that it, Ramana Maharshi is starting right off basically saying that's ignorance. And the first thing you have to do is let go of that idea. And obviously, if we don't let go of that idea, we're not going to apply ourselves. And in fact, it's embedded in this man's question that there's no sense in even applying myself to this self-inquiry. Because it's unattainable, shouldn't I just do some of the more normal Hindu paths that everybody else is doing? Right? So the man is kind of proving that we won't apply ourselves if we think we don't have a chance. Which is why Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj and others teach that faith or trust in the guru's teachings is a requirement. If the guru says you can realize in this lifetime, you have to trust that. In fact, Nisargadatta, that's what he is always saying. He says, I trusted my guru, right? And did as he asked. I mean, it's that simple. And Nisargadatta, I think, in spite of, you know, how complex I am that appears to be, was actually a very simple man. And so that's a very simple statement. My guru told me to do this. Focus on the I am presence with all of my free time, and I could be self-realized. I trusted him, and I did it, right? It's just that simple. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, self-realization is not a knowledge to be acquired, so that acquiring it, one may obtain happiness. It is one's ignorant outlook that one should give up. The self you seek to know is verily yourself. The self you seek to know is verily yourself. Your supposed ignorance causes you needless grief, like that of the 10 foolish men who grieved the loss of the 10th man who was never lost. And now I know why this answer is so long. Ramana Maharshi is going to tell a story. So let me take a drink and then we'll listen to his story. Here we go. The 10 foolish men in the parable forded a stream and on reaching the other shore wanted to make sure that all of them had in fact safely crossed the stream. One of the 10 began to count, but while counting others, left himself out. I see only 9. Sure enough, we have lost one. Who can it be? He said. Did you count correctly? Asked another, and did the counting himself. But he too counted only 9. One after the other, each of the 10 counted only 9, missing himself. We are only 9, they all agreed. But who is the missing one? They asked themselves. Every effort they made to discover the missing individual failed. Whoever he be that is drowned, said the most sentimental of the 10 fools, we have lost him. So saying, he burst into tears, and the rest of the 9 followed suit. Seeing them weeping on the riverbank, a sympathetic wayfarer inquired for the cause. They related what had happened and said that even after counting themselves several times, they could find no more than 9. On hearing the story, but seeing all 10 before him, the wayfarer guessed what had happened. In order to make them know for themselves that they were really 10, that all of them had come safe from the crossing, he told them, "Let each of you count for himself, but one after the other, serially, 1, 2, 3, and so on, while I shall give you each a blow, so that of all of you may be sure of having been included in the count and included only once. The 10th missing man will be found." Hearing this, they rejoiced at the prospect of finding their lost comrade and accepted the method suggested by the wayfarer. While the kind wayfarer gave a blow, he's so kind, he's hitting them across the head. While the kind wayfarer gave a blow to each of the 10 in turn, he that got the blow counted himself aloud. 10, said the last man as he got the last blow in his turn. Bewildered, they looked at one another. We are 10, they said with one voice, and thanked the wayfarer for having removed that grief. That is the parable. From where was the 10th man brought in? Was he ever lost? By knowing that he had been there all the while, did they learn anything new? The cause of their grief was not the real loss of any one of the 10. It was their own ignorance. Rather, their mere supposition that one of them was lost, though they could not find who he was, because they counted only 9. So before we continue, so again, all 10 of them were there, but when they counted, they were only looking out, right? When they looked out, they only counted 9, and they assumed something was missing. So what we have in common with those 10 fools is that we're looking out, thinking that self-realization is missing, right? That's where we're just like them. We're looking out, assuming that self-realization is missing. And in order to see that self-realization is not missing, we have to learn to look within. Because that's where self-realization is alive and well right now. It's never actually been lost, just like the 10th man was never actually lost. So Ramana Maharshi is saying the only problem is ignorance, right? Counting out and not counting yourself, not looking at yourself. Jacqueline, are you being hit in the head with a tail? That's what it looks like, yeah. All right, so let's continue reading. Such is the case with you. Truly, there is no cause for you to be miserable and unhappy. You yourself impose limitations on your true nature of infinite being and then weep that you are but a finite creature. Then you take up this or that practice to transcend the non-existent limitations. But if your practice itself assumes the existence of limitations, how can it help you to transcend them? Hence, I say, know that you are really the infinite, pure being, the self absolute. You are always that self and nothing but that self. Therefore, you can never be really ignorant of the self. Your ignorance is merely a formal ignorance, like the ignorance of the 10 fools about the lost 10th man. It is this ignorance that caused them grief. Know then that true knowledge does not create a new being for you. It only removes your ignorant ignorance. How's that term? Ignorant ignorance. Know then that true knowledge does not create a new being for you. It only removes your ignorant ignorance. Bliss is not added to your nature. It is merely revealed as your true nature and natural state, eternal and imperishable. The only way to be rid of your grief is to know and be the self. How can this be unattainable? Right? How can it be unattainable to know yourself? And when we were at the self-inquiry retreat this week, there were several times where Anne imitated a friend of hers, also a friend of mine, Jack. And she would get like, Jack, I guess, gets really, really excited when he's saying this. And he would say, you know, something like, how can you not know who you are? How can you not know who you are? Or something like that. So, and in effect, Ramana Maharshi is saying the same thing. How can knowing the self be unattainable? And yet at the same time, he is admitting that the ignorance has to be removed, right? And that's not any different than what many of us learned first originally through A Course in Miracles, right? That love cannot be taught, but we have to seek the obstacles to love's presence. And of course, remove those obstacles. And then the love is known. And love and the self are synonymous, which is one of the meditations we looked at this week at the self-inquiry retreat. We looked at the fact that love, self, awareness, peace are all one, right? They're all the same thing, right? The self is not at peace. The self is peace. The self is not loving. The self is love, right? And the only thing that keeps us from knowing that is our own ideas about who we are. And that's really what it comes down to. Our own ideas about who we are is what's in the way of knowing who we are. Yeah. Jacqueline says, that's what the reading said this morning. We make up our limitations and then cry about being limited. So that's the end of the self-inquiry section. And the next section, which begins on page 80, is called Sadhana. I don't think I'm saying it right, but it's like I'm trying to break it up the way it's supposed to be broken up, and my tongue simply won't do it. That's the way it is sometimes when you're raised with one tongue. I mean, I know how my friend would say this, but I can't make my tongue do that. So sadhana and grace, which really means practice and grace, right? Practice and grace. Even the title is something worth contemplating. Like, is there a relationship between practice and grace? You know, why would there be a chapter called practice and grace? So here we go. The first devotee says, research on God has been going on from time immemorial. Has the final word been said? Now, this is interesting because Ramana Maharshi's answer is nothing. It says here in parentheses that Ramana Maharshi keeps silence for some time. I was telling people at the self-inquiry retreat, although we seldom see this in this book because the book is about questions and answers. But when you read books about Ramana Maharshi, biographies about Ramana Maharshi, what you discover is Ramana Maharshi did not answer every question that was put forth to him. Often people would come in asking questions and he would just remain silent. So here we're just getting an opportunity to see that. And one of the quotes that we contemplated at the self-inquiry retreat this week showed us why. It was a quote by Ramana Maharshi. And he was pointing out that instead of asking questions, you should seek the questioner. You know, from where do these questions come? Who is questioning? Who sees the question? The way to enlightenment isn't, you know, asking questions of someone outside of you and receiving answers, which you will store in your intellect. The way to enlightenment is looking to see who you are. In fact, if we think about the story we just heard about the 10 ignorant men, the reason they thought they were missing the 10th is because they kept looking outward when they were counting, right? They never looked back at themselves. It was out, 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 out. But when you come to Ramana Maharshi or any other teacher and you ask a question, that's out. It's the same out, just like the ignorant men counting out, right? And so if Ramana Maharshi plays this game with people, this game of you lack knowledge, I have it, you ask, I'll answer, he's in no way helping them outside of the habit of out, 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 right? And so often what Ramana Maharshi would do when people ask questions is just sit in silence. He wouldn't respond. And in fact, the retreat that we just had, the self-inquiry retreat, although there certainly were some questions, the way the retreat was set up was that we would contemplate a quote of Ramana Maharshi's. We would read it slowly two times, and then we would wait until someone had something to share. And then after, we would wait until someone else had something to share. And if there was a long pause and it seemed like nothing new was coming, we would read the quote again and see if there was more. And then we would wait until someone had something to share. And we just stayed with a quote as long as we stayed with a quote until, in effect, we felt like we had milked that quote for all the knowledge that we could get out of it. But the knowledge came from ourselves, right? Each person sitting and being with the quote. And when we read the quote on the last time, the amount of clarity that was in the quote was phenomenal. It seemed like there was a lot more clarity in the quote when we read it the last time than when we read it the first time. Because the first time we hadn't yet contemplated. We didn't yet really know what it meant. And if we had asked a teacher, an outside teacher, what does this mean? And they had explained it to us, we would have thought we learned it from that outside teacher. But by sitting with the quote on our own, and each of us sharing as our own clarity came to us, we realized that the understanding of what this quote was saying was actually in us. And so it helped in our looking in this direction towards ourselves. It pointed in that direction. Contemplation points in that direction. It's really meditation that takes us deeply in. But when you contemplate, you're still pointing towards yourself, not towards an outer teacher, like when you're questioning. So I love that quote that we looked at this week, that instead of asking questions, contemplate the questioner, right? Look for the questioner. So often, again, Ramana Maharshi would not answer, but then again, other times he did, which is why we have books with questions and answers. So let's look at this again, because we are going to get some responses out of him. So the devotee says, research on God has been going on from time immemorial. Has the final word been said? Well, I want to pause it. It just reminds me, I was at a gathering with David Hoffmeister many, many years ago. And someone asked the question, But because, you know, everybody puts A Course in Miracles on such a pedestal, or many people do, not everybody. I don't. But many people put A Course in Miracles on this huge pedestal. And of course, people that hang around David Hoffmeister do, because he's a teacher of A Course in Miracles, right? So somebody asked David if A Course in Miracles was the last book to be written, you know, about truth. And David said, oh no, there will be many, many more books, right? And in fact, it seems like this guy is asking a very similar question. Research on God has been going on from time immemorial. Has the final word been said? Now, why is it that many, many more books on truth will be written? Why is it that A Course in Miracles wasn't the last book? One answer is because the way many of us wake ourselves up is through our own writing process. These books come through the authors, although sometimes the authors don't realize it. These books come through the authors because it's the way the inner teacher comes through them to teach them. And so as long as there are people waking up, there will be books about waking up. It's a completely natural process. So I don't know what Ramana Maharshi is going to say, but what I want to say is the final word is not said until, from our perspective, the final one has awakened, right? Until then, the discovery of what God is, the discovery of what truth is naturally going to continue. Because someone still has some discovering to do, right? So let's see how Ramana finally answers this question. Research on God has been going on from time immemorial. Has the final word been said? And then Ramana Maharshi keeps silence for some time. Puzzled, the questioner says, should I consider Sri Bhagavan's silence as the reply to my question? And Ramana Maharshi says, yes. And then he says some words I don't know, so we're going to have to look them up. Let me look up these words, and I'll say this in English. No sense in even bastardizing the Tamil or the Sanskrit, because you guys wouldn't understand it anyway. So silence is the true form of God. Should I consider Sri Bhagavan's silence as the reply to my question? Yes. Silence is the true form of God. Hence the text, the truth of Supreme Brahman proclaimed through silent eloquence. Apparently a book they would have known about. But it's interesting, again, if you look at the question. Research on God has been going on from time immemorial. Has the final word been said? And then Ramana Maharshi just keeps silent until the questioner comes back and says, should I consider Sri Bhagavan's silence as the reply to my question? Yes. Silence is the true form of God. Hence the text, the truth of the Supreme Brahman proclaimed through silent eloquence. The devotee says, Buddha is said to have ignored such inquiries about God. So there we have another teacher who didn't always answer questions, right? Buddha is said to have ignored such inquiries about God. And for this is Ramana Maharshi, and for this he was called a nihilist. In fact, Buddha concerned himself more with directing the seeker to realize bliss here and now than with academic discussion about God. Buddha concerned himself more with directing the seeker to realize bliss here and now than with academic discussion about God. And again, that's really what these two retreats are about, the self-inquiry retreat and the natural meditation retreat. I mean, those retreats are purely focused on helping everyone look within and realize the bliss here and now. It's not about learning more ideas, concepts, teachings about truth, right? Adding to the mental library of truth. The little bit of contemplating we did was only to assist in our looking, right? To assist us in understanding what looking is, to assist us in understanding what we weren't looking at, because that's really important, and pointing us towards what we were looking toward. And even giving us an idea of what the ultimate goal is, because we can stop short of the ultimate goal if we don't have an understanding of it. But it's all about, both of these retreats are all about learning to look within and look for truth. It's not lecture. It's not learning in the traditional sense of the word. So Buddha concerned himself more with directing the seeker to realize bliss here and now than with academic discussion about God. The devotee says, God is described as manifest and unmanifest. As the former, he is said to include the world as a part of his being. If that is so, we, as part of that world, should have easily known him in the manifested form. God is everywhere. It should be easy to know him, is what this questioner is saying. Listening to, I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? If God is everywhere, it should be easy to know him. But listen to Ramana Maharshi's answer. Know yourself before you seek to decide about the nature of God and the world. Know yourself before you seek to decide about the nature of God and the world. So God is described as manifest and unmanifest. This is back to the questioner. As the former, he is said to include the world as a part of his being. If that is so, listen to this. We as part of that world. There's ignorance right there, right? We as part of that world should have easily known him in the manifested form. You see right there, the questioner is misunderstanding who or what he is. He has defined himself as we, part of the world, part of the world. If God is everything, including the world, and I am part of the world. Do you hear the ignorance in that? The mistake in that? And so Ramana Maharshi says, know yourself before you seek to decide about the nature of God and the world, right? When you know yourself, you're not going to define yourself as a part of the world anymore. The devotee says, does knowing myself imply knowing God? And Ramana Maharshi says, yes, God is within you, right? So when you get to know yourself, you also know the nature of God because it's the same. To know thyself is to know God. But first you have to seek to know yourself. I remember a similar but different quote. By Jesus. And this is one of the first, it might even been the first writing I ever did with my withinness. I think it was probably the very first time I ever wrote with what I called Holy Spirit. Jesus said, love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And what this first writing said to me was I couldn't actually love my neighbor until I loved myself, right? Because you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. Doesn't that imply you have to know how to love yourself first? But the same idea is being applied here in kind of a larger scale. You know God by knowing yourself. But in order to know God, doesn't that imply that you have to know yourself first? Right? Just like you can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself, you can't know God if you don't know yourself, right? So that's what Ramana Maharshi is really pointing out here, is this man is seeking to know God. He says, know yourself before you seek to decide about the nature of God and the world. And again, the devotee asks, does knowing myself imply knowing God? And Ramana says, yes, God is within you. The devotee says, then what stands in the way of my knowing myself or God? Right? That's a good question. This is one I'm sure Ramana will not remain silent on, because this is a good question. What stands in the way of me knowing myself or knowing God? That's a good question. And here's Ramana's answer. Your wandering mind and perverted ways. And that's an interesting answer. The wandering mind, many of us would expect, but the perverted ways, that's kind of an interesting addition to the answer. And again, one of the things we talked about at the self-inquiry retreat, although we didn't use the word perverted, people might have gotten left. I said, how are you perverted? but what I did ask them is how they sabotage themselves, right? They were asked to contemplate how they sabotage themselves. And if you kind of look at that without any kind of judgment, can't you see how sabotaging yourself and your perverted ways are probably the same thing? Yeah, Don's like, yep, yeah, I can see that. So things we each want to look at is how do we sabotage ourselves? You know, and there are some very, very subtle ways we sabotage ourselves. For example, when I was looking at how I sabotage myself, one of the things that I discovered is that on weekends here, because there's this little voice in my head, which I guess we can call ego, because there's this little voice in my head that says that I'm supposed to be with him on weekends. When I get up in the morning on Saturday and Sunday mornings, I go into the living room. And I do contemplate. Sometimes I contemplate for 2 or 3 hours. So it's not like I skip practice entirely. I contemplate. But what I don't do is meditate. Because there's also this thought that Ron's going to think I'm weird if I'm sitting here meditating. You know, that's not his thing. Contemplating looks just like working on my computer. To him, it looks normal, right? He's over there working on his computer. It looks like I'm over here working on my computer. He can't really tell that I'm contemplating. But if I was to meditate, that would stand out. So what I saw is that this whole little thing I just told you, this idea of going and sitting, this idea that I have to go and sit in the living room with him, this idea that he's going to think I'm strange if I meditate, that leads me to skip meditating on Saturday and Sunday mornings. Typically, I mean, occasionally I do, but typically I skip it. That's a way that I sabotage myself, that whole story that I just told you. So what I committed to at the retreat was instead of going into the living room on Saturday and Sunday mornings, I would come down to my office, right? Just come down here and maybe even meditate first and then go into contemplation afterwards. I could even go back upstairs and contemplate if I want to, because he doesn't bother me. You know, he's just sitting across the room playing with his computer. but there are a whole bunch of ways that we sabotage ourselves. And these are our perverted ways, right? Listen to the question again. Then what stands in the way of my knowing myself or God? What stands in the way? Well, the short answer is you do. You're your own worst problem, your own worst enemy, right? Nothing stands in the way but you. But to clarify that, Ramana Maharshi says, your wandering mind and your perverted ways. Right? That's what stands in the way. And so there's two things then that we need to let go of. Our wandering mind and our perverted ways, the ways that we sabotage ourselves. You know, so one question we can all ask ourselves is, how am I my own worst enemy? How do I keep myself from knowing myself? Right? If we really want to know ourselves. And again, one thing we want to be careful about when we follow this investigation is we don't want to do it with judgment. Right? We don't want to make ourselves guilty, make ourselves unworthy, make ourselves bad. We just want to look with clarity on how we get in our own way. And maybe seek with our heart to see if possibly we want to make some changes so that we aren't in our own way at least as much. Eventually, I would say not at all. But as Michael Langford points out, as our desire for liberation increases, the ego's tricks will decrease. We'll see through them, right? So those sabotages should also decrease. Our perverted ways should also decrease just because our desire for truth is stronger. But that doesn't mean we can't start right here, right now, looking and seeing which of those obstacles that come from our own behavior that we're willing to let go of right now, that we're willing to make a change about right now. Adan says, I know that's a really good question for me because it's making me squirm. You squirm with a big smile on your face, Don. Yeah. So what stands in the way of my knowing myself or God? Your wandering mind. Yeah, Jacqueline, just type in, you've got to change your evil ways, baby. Is that a song? Sounds like a song. Yeah, we should play it. I don't know the song. Let me know if one of you guys want to play it at the end. We will. Oh, listen to this. Listen to this. Listen to this. I think this might sound familiar to some of you, what the questioner is going to say next. I mean, you know, maybe you wouldn't say it in exactly these words, but I think it's going to sound somewhat familiar. Remember, Ramana Maharshi just said that your wandering mind and your perverted ways are what's in the way of knowing yourself, right? The questioner says, I am a weak creature. But why does not the superior power of the Lord within remove the obstacle? And Ramana says, yes, he will, if you have the aspiration. And I think that's a fine answer that Ramana Maharshi gave here. Oh, it's Carlos Santana. Okay, we'll go look at that. I'll make sure I stop in time. Or if somebody else wants to pull it up and tell me how long it is, we'll go look at that. This is a fine answer. You know, the guy says, I'm a weak creature, so why doesn't God do it for me, right? And he says, he will if you have the aspiration. That's a fine answer, but there's something in me that just feels like Ramana is not being as direct as he could be. You know, maybe there's just feeling that this person isn't really ready for that directness. The directness is, of course, there is no God. Not the kind of God that's separate from you, that's going to heal you because you're a weak creature and you can't do it, but he loves you and he has mercy on you, so he'll do it for you. Like, that doesn't exist. Thank you for the time. What exists is what Ramana called silence a moment ago, what we tend to call awareness. What some people call present. When you focus on awareness, when that is your goal, to focus on awareness, to focus on silence, that awareness is the light that heals everything, right? That awareness is the light that heals everything. So if you aren't spending time focusing on awareness in at least some way, to expect mother and heal you, but if you are focusing on awareness in some way, you will most certainly be healed. For me, focusing on awareness started in a very elementary way. I mean, I didn't even know awareness as I know awareness now, but it was still the light of awareness that I brought to root cause inquiry. right? When I started asking root cause inquiry, when I started asking, why am I upset? And I was looking, do you hear the word? Looking to find out the real reason I was upset instead of just believing that person did something wrong. What is that looking? That's awareness. You see, the light of awareness heals. And the deeper you go into awareness, the more healing you can expect, all the way to the healing of the idea of the ego. So in that way, what Ramana Maharshi is saying here is absolutely true. If we call awareness God, if we just use that word, God will heal you if you have the inspiration. But of course, Ramana isn't really taking the time to give this individual insight as to what he means by that, right? We have to have the desire for awareness. That's what we have the desire for, awareness. And we have to bring ourselves to awareness, maybe in the beginning through journaling, right? Through looking at our minds with journaling, but eventually through awareness, watching awareness types of meditation, because it's the awareness that heals. It's the awareness that is the light that awakens. And that, of course, requires our aspiration, right? Our desire for awakening, to bring ourselves to awareness. You bring the false to the true, right? The true being the light of awareness. All right, 4 minutes. Let's stop and play that song. Has anybody else got it queued up? You have it, Jacqueline? Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Jacqueline and let her play this song for us.
Baby,
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone. And I'm releasing the mic.